This summer is going to be the last opportunity for you to explore a pretty moving exhibition in your own community. And if you have not been a part of this just yet, we would certainly encourage you to consider doing so with your church group, school group, individuals, work group, perhaps. The LJD Jewish Family and Community Services is presenting Histories in Hand. It's a new exhibit in the Frisch Family Holocaust Memorial Gallery, which in and of itself is a moving experience. But this is the connection between personal objects and the stories they carry, inviting you to reflect on memory and survival from the Holocaust. And Christine, as we entered the room this morning before 6 a.m. to set up, not only was it illuminating with the candles that are always illuminated here, but then you see the beautiful photos of the women and men and then the personal effects that accompany them. I don't know about you, but like you get a feeling and an emotion, and it's deeply personal.
It is. I expected something, you know, I expected black and white photographs, no color. I expected more historical photographs. I did not understand the personal connection between the photos and the objects and the marriage of the two in this history exhibit, and it was very moving.
And there are so many individuals in our community who gave of themselves as contributors. One is Lewis Post, who's visiting with us right now. And was it difficult, Lewis, for you to contribute to this exhibit, or was it an easy decision when you were approached?
Oh, it was very easy decision.
Yeah.
Very easy.
Why is that?
Well, because I think you want to share with others your own history, but more so it's a way of giving honor to about 100 family members who were murdered during the war. It's a sort of a testimonial. It's the only thing that's left, literally left, from two families who were annihilated during World War II in concentration camps. So if you think of 100 people, the photos of these three objects are the only thing that's remaining, literally.
Tell me about the objects, and they're right over our shoulder. So tell me about these three objects.
Well, they're, in Judaism, they are a sort of ritual, home, ceremonial objects, religious objects. One are candlesticks. Everybody recognized them, but they're meant to, these particular candlesticks, all these objects date from my father's mother's home. I don't call her my grandmother, she is, I never met her. She was killed way before I was born. And they're called Sabbath candlesticks, they're lit in Jewish homes on Friday nights. The other one is a wine cup, it's also ceremonial. Use it to recite blessings on Friday nights, other holidays, celebrate at home, observe it at home. And the third is a spice box, which is used when the Sabbath ends in observant religious homes.
And how were they recovered?
Well, when the war broke out, my father was 27 years old. I don't think I would have had the foresight to do what he did. He buried these objects. Sometime between 1939, when World War II started and Poland was occupied, in 1942, when he was deported from this small hometown outside of Krakow, where he resided with his mother and brothers, and was sent to a slave labor camp outside of Krakow. So he buried them. Very few people did that. I don't know what else he buried. When I was in graduate school, my father had a stroke, became aphasic. I couldn't ask him. And as a young man, I really wasn't interested in learning. I was not really interested. So then it was too late to ask.
But he went back to go get the objects.
When he, at the end of the war in 1945, he went back. There is the tragic history that some Jews in Poland were killed by their old neighbors when they returned to their hometowns. And so he recovered these objects, I know, at night.
Wow. So there was danger in even recovering them, in addition to just thinking to bury them and all the other dangers that were presented to him in order for him to have these personal effects and then pass them on. how did you then obtain, and how are you making sure that these are part of your history and passing on to future generations?
Well, you know, so ever, I don't know if you have ever gone through this exercise of thinking, so if my house, if I had to leave my house and I had 5 minutes and they say, grab something, I probably would think about grabbing these objects at the same time as I was thinking about grabbing my wallet and car keys. So they represent, I mean, there's power in objects always. Everybody knows there's power in objects because we put a lot of our feelings in objects. I mean, little kids do this with their blankets and with their toys. I'm not comparing these objects to that, but really to the fact that we all put a lot of ourselves into objects. Like I like my car. These objects, for me, represent a continuity with the past. They also represent the future, because when I'm not here, they're going to be divided somehow between my sons. I have two sons, adult sons. So I have never thought about how I would do that, because I can't split the candlesticks. But I just realized I'll give the candlesticks to one and the other two objects to another, and that's how I'll do it. And I just came to that now. So
we're glad
breaking
we can
news.
Be of help.
That's right.
But you mentioned something a few minutes ago that's so impactful, because as a younger man, and you know, there's no guilt in that, but or shame, I don't think, in that. But as a younger person, you just weren't invested in the story as much. How important is it for you to see through the eyes of younger people today that they do need to show some investment in this part of our history?
Well, it is incredibly important. And I encourage my sons, who are now in their 40s, they know that history, but they're not ready. It is not an easy story to tell if you are intimately involved. I'm 77 years old, and I started to talk about the Holocaust maybe 5 years ago, 6 years ago. You know, you can distance yourself, but at some point in telling the story, it does, you pay a price emotionally. Mm. So really my hat's off to individuals who are called third generation, meaning that their grandparents survived the Holocaust. And for them to talk and take this on at, you know, in their 40s or 50s, that requires a commitment.
You said you started talking about it 5 years ago. Has that had a healing impact on you at all?
I am not sure that I did it to heal. I did it because I thought there was a need to talk about the cost of dehumanizing groups of people and what danger it poses to a society. That's why I started to talk. Mm. It really wasn't to tell my family's story. There are lots of family stories. There are a lot of cultures that have where people come from countries where horrible things happen. I give talks, and when I talk to college students, invariably someone comes up and says, last talk I gave, a young woman came up in tears, said, my grandfather lived through the events of Cambodia where millions of people were murdered. So I don't speak about it to emphasize the murder. I speak about it to emphasize what happens when you identify a group of people and start talking, and you start talking about them as if they're not human. Mm. That's the issue for me.
You mentioned talking to a college group. How active are you in getting out and sharing your story and other stories like yours in the community?
Well, the building in which we're speaking is the home of the Holocaust Speakers Bureau for Northeast Florida. So there is a rotating group of speakers, first generation, second generation, third generation. I'm second because my parents were the Holocaust survivors. And as people invite us, we go out and speak. So a few times, maybe two or three times each year.
When you look at the photo of yourself and those three items, what do you think?
Well, I don't like the photo of myself.
Nobody does. No one.
Everyone's saying the same thing.
Who's the dour-looking man? but what I think is that, you know, there is no memorial to all the family members who were lost, and you can't erect a memorial to them, but at least a piece of them is living in the present, in terms of what these objects stand for. And these objects stand for family and home and warmth, being with the people you love. That's what they stand for. So it's a connection to the present. Hopefully there will be people around these objects in the future. But the sad reality is that the people who surrounded these objects, people who lived with these objects, they were murdered. The culture, the society that these objects were part of, that's been destroyed on purpose, deliberately. But so for me, it stands for renewal, life going on, building, rebuilding, hope.
And I love that there's color and texture to them. It makes it even more illuminating and beautiful. Thank you for sharing your story.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me here. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having us help to share that story and illuminate the story. Lewis Post is one of the exhibit contributors here at the LJD Jewish Family and Community Services, and you can learn a lot more and schedule a time for, again, a group, whether you're a teacher or you're part of any organization, JacksonvilleHolocaustMemorial.com. Jacksonville's Morning News continues live on location 819.